Good evening, friends. One of the most firmly established traditions of our nation is that the military authority shall be subordinate to the civil authority. The founders of the Republic were well read in history, and they knew that free governments often had been subverted when the military power overawed the civilian government. The most notable instance of this was the Roman Republic. In order to prevent it from happening here, the president, a civilian, was made commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy. Army appropriations for a longer period than 2 years were forbidden in the Constitution. The custom of appointing civilians to head the departments of War and Navy was firmly established. The courts repeatedly ruled that civilians could not be hailed before military tribunals. This nation never maintained a large standing army as most European countries did. Our principal reliance for defense was placed upon the militia. For that reason, we were woefully unprepared at the outbreak of most of the major wars in which we have engaged. During the past 3 years, and especially during recent months, these traditions have been breaking down. This commentator expressed the opinion before the close of World War II that the greatest threat to our freedom during the years ahead would be the danger of domination by the military. Well, today, the most ostensible threat to freedom is Soviet aggression. But it is open to question whether this threat itself, or the measures we have taken to meet it, constitute the more serious menace to free government. The business of the Army, Navy, and Air Force is to devise means for meeting any threat to our national security. No one will deny that to enable them to do this job, they must be provided with the means. Tremendous appropriations have been made, and our manpower has been put at their disposal through the draft. No one will deny, either, that military leaders must be kept informed concerning our diplomacy and its hazards, so that they will know the direction from which any possible attack on us might come. But it is no business of the military to shape our foreign policy or decide the direction which it should take. That is a civilian job. Yet our foreign policy today is being shaped and directed by military men. Our Secretary of State, our ambassador at Moscow, the ruler of our zone in Germany, and the closest advisor to President Truman, every one of these is a military man. Here is what Hanson W. Baldwin, one of the ablest, shrewdest, and most careful military experts in our nation, has to say about it. I quote from an article by him in the New York Times of last Monday. Since the war, not only the civilian leaders of the military establishment, but uniformed officers themselves have been most vocal about foreign affairs. Their judgments and pronunciamentos have been so frequent and emphatic, and occasionally so at variance with the State Department views, that sometimes one would suspect that the military and not the State Department was making foreign policy. These public speeches, interviews, and statements have not been isolated, but general. End of quotation. He goes on to cite cases. They speak and write openly about war with the Soviet Union. They report Russian submarines off our coast without much substantiation. They attack the Soviet Union in blatant and aggressive manners. They engage in name-calling and they get into politics. It is an awful commentary upon our vigilance that the people of this country are so little concerned about what is happening. The wise words of General Eisenhower when he refused to run for the presidency seem to have been forgotten. One ray of hope is that if Mr. Dewey is elected president in November, there's liable to be some changes made. Good night.